Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Now it works. Let's kick it off, kids. Patriots and the Raiders, 4:15 Eastern time on Sunday afternoon. John Rook with you here inside the playbook for Thursday. Stuff to get to today includes, of course, Eric Scalavino live from Patriots camp in San Jose, California. And we will check in with Russell Baxter from ESPN.com, our NFL research coordinator, toward the second hour of the program. In fact, I believe Eric is on the line as we speak. Eric, good afternoon to you. How are you, sir?
Oh, I was going to say good morning to you, John.
Yes, I know. It's morning.
We're on
morning for you.
Time. Morning, afternoon, good day. Let's just say good day.
Good day to you. Anything new to report other than what we talked about yesterday and what might have been already run around by the guys today in terms of any of the injuries or Matt Cassel's situation?
The new item I have for Matt Cassel was actually reported by the Boston Globe this morning that the funeral services for his father will be on Monday.
Okay.
So that's about the most new information I can give you. That only can lead us to speculate on what Cassel's availability will be for Sunday. I was mulling this around when I saw that news, and I was thinking, well, he potentially has time to take care of all the arrangements between now and Sunday, fly up, be here for the game on Sunday, and then go back down to Southern California for the funeral on Monday. Again, that's just me going through scenarios in my head. But we don't know for certain what's going to happen yet. Maybe we'll know more today. We're about 45 minutes away right now from players arriving for practice and their availability with the media. No Coach Belichick today, as is the normal Thursday schedule. So we won't get any updates directly from him, but we'll see what we can get from any of the players on what they may or may not know. As far as having talked with their teammate there. So once that happens, like yesterday, we'll try to check back in and out whenever we get anything noteworthy.
Okay, very good. All right, that's a step then, at least toward getting some information down. I mean, it's pretty clear to see that, and everybody has been unanimous with this. I can't expect that there would be a different take on this from anyone, but fact is that everybody handles the death of a family member differently. There is no right way to handle it. Some people have to grieve differently than others. Some people need to be kept busy. Some people need to be by themselves. You know, it's really entirely up to Matt. It's heartwarming, I think, to know that his teammates feel like they do about him. The fact that he has now become a leader, if not the leader in that clubhouse, says something, I think, about his character and about how the guys believe in him, and that if he needs little time, the guys are willing to, you know, allow him to have that.
Certainly. And, you know, it's interesting how this season has played out for him. You know, he's been the perennial backup ever since he left high school. We all know his story at USC and then, you know, playing behind the two Heisman winners there and then coming here and playing behind the Super Bowl and league MVP here, and then, you know, getting his moment to shine earlier this season. But there were, you know, as early as August, there were people saying that he wasn't even going to make the team this year. Then he does make the team, and he has really grown into the role. I think he's proven himself to be a very reliable and in some cases a prolific quarterback this season. Now he's got this ordeal that he has to overcome as just another thing that will sort of serve to, I think, make him mature even more.
Right.
Not only as a person, but as a player too. Because if you can overcome something like as emotional as this during a season and still perform at a level that you expect to, that's only going to help you down the road when it's back to just being football and not about life and death matters. I think it'll help him put things in perspective better, and I think he'll end up being, better served by, having to do it during the season as opposed to the off season.
Right. Well,
if that
put.
If that makes sense.
Sure. Absolutely. Let's kind of look at it from this vantage point. What can you tell us, if anything at all, Eric, about the reps that Kevin O'Connell got in practice and with what personnel groupings, based on what you're allowed to see?
Yeah. Unfortunately, what we're allowed to see is very limited, and much of it involves stretching.
Yep.
So we only get to see generally one or two actual drills with the players, and O'Connell was taking the first snaps in the couple of drills we saw, but those were basically individual quarterback drills, so it's not like we could gauge much of his performance with the rest of the offense as a unit, because we weren't there to see it when it was happening. All I can go by is what his teammates have said about him, which is that they have confidence in him and that he's proven in practice, at least, that he's capable of running the offense. He's got a strong arm and can make all the throws. So I'll have to take their word for that, because we haven't really had a chance to see him do that.
Let's also look at it from this aspect. Let's just say, for instance, that Matt does stay away all week and then does return in time for the game. Is it conceivable that he wouldn't start, or is it a given that, hey, if he comes back in time to play, he's going to play?
Well, that's an interesting question, John, and I'm not sure it's one that many people have considered at this point, because so much is unknown. But I would think that that's a legitimate possibility, given how, preparation is a big part of who plays and who doesn't each week. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys who don't practice for injury reasons, but who might be good enough to play on Sunday, don't always start because, physically and or mentally, they're not prepared for that particular game. I think that's an interesting point, and I think it's a legitimate possibility. Again, hopefully we'll know a little bit more today than we did yesterday about, when he might be back or not. But, I think it's I'd say you're onto something there. I think it's certainly a possibility.
Well, I guess that's probably going to be an extremely awkward question to ask, because if you ask it, someone will look at you like you're very, you're an unfeeling SOB. And at the same time, from a football standpoint, it's a legitimate question to ask based on, what we know, the drill is, in terms of what the Patriots do every week.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it certainly is. I mean, I think yesterday was the day to address the non-football aspect of this issue. And I think we did that pretty well. The players did it pretty well. Almost everyone had something to say about it. So I think either today or tomorrow would be the proper time to at least say, because the closer we get to the game, the closer we have to focus on what's going to actually happen on Sunday.
Right.
So I think it's reasonable to start at least trying to ascertain what the scenarios might be for him and for O'Connell.
Right. Well, so I suppose then if, in another 40 minutes or so, whenever the players arrive and you get off and talk to them, if we learn anything new, I'm certain you'll give us a buzz back, at least drop word that this is what's going to happen. So that'll be great. In the meantime, though, we saw, of course, that, and based on the participation report that was issued at the end of practice yesterday, we saw that Vince Wilfork was at least back out there on a limited basis, and I can only assume that is very good news for the Patriots.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the even bigger news was that Ty Warren was back at practice as well. So having the two of them out there, Warren, of course, had missed several practices in the last few games.
Last couple of games with a groin problem, groin injury?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And he was hoping to go against Seattle last week. He said he was about 50-50 on whether or not he'd play. He ended up not playing. But we saw him working out several times that week leading up to the game, and even in Seattle was trying to do whatever he could to get that injury fixed. But he was actually back out on the field yesterday, which I thought was very encouraging. And Wilfork who went out of the game and didn't come back with that shoulder injury was back out there. And so, yeah, I think the likelihood that the two of them play this week is much better than it first appeared.
Well, that'll certainly help things on the defensive side of the ball, which, as we all know, is where the Patriots need the most help. I think it'll be really curious to see what they decide to do in terms of starters in the linebacking core and how that rotation goes, obviously, with Teddy Bruschi out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one area that, you know, for a while ago it was the secondary where all the concern was because guys kept dropping. Now that seems to have sort of plateaued. We seem to have gotten some steady contribution there, and now it's the linebackers that are taking the big casualties. So you're right; it is going to be interesting. Pierre Woods didn't practice yesterday.
Did he make the trip? Did Woods even make the trip?
I have not seen him.
Okay,
that doesn't mean he didn't, but I haven't seen him around here. So, and he wasn't out on the field yesterday. So that's not a good sign. And of course, Bruschi's back on the East Coast, as we know, so he won't be out here. It looks like for the Oakland game.
Now, Eric, I know that members of the practice squad were traveling here as well, so it was almost a kind of a all hands on deck situation this week, wasn't it?
Well, that was the case back in October too.
Those
practice squad players didn't come out for the first leg of the journey. They came in the middle of the week, as they normally would participate in practice back home at Gillette. So that wasn't too much of a surprise. I think that was just, regularly scheduled for them because they really weren't needed on Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
That's just a day to review film, and Tuesday's the day off. So, I don't think you can really read anything more into that. The linebacker situation is very intriguing because now you have, you know, if Will Fort can come back and Warren can both come back, you wonder if we're going to see maybe some more 4-3 looks than we normally do just because of personnel limitations that they have.
Well, I think they've got the personnel up front to be able to do that if they want to do it, so I think that'll be a curious thing to watch. My guess is they'll be stubborn and they'll stay with the 3-4, but they should give a lot more 4-3 look, I think, because the groupings and the injury situations dictate that they could do that.
Yeah, exactly, and you know that they certainly are. They're a flexible defense, and as we've seen, they've started games with the 4-3, and shifted back and forth with it throughout the game. So it just depends on what they feel is best for that particular opponent. But I think this week they might be forced into it a little bit more because the personnel just is not there. They just don't have the numbers at linebacker. I mean, they do have enough to start a 4-3 a 3-4 if they wanted to, but I think as far as feeling safe that you have enough depth there, it might be more advantageous for them to go to a 4-3 at least for this game and then see how things shake out with Bruschi and Woods next week. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. The one of the names that I kicked around a little bit yesterday because he was cut by a team yesterday, and I wanted to know if there was any talk at all amongst media people or anything in San Jose about Brian Kelly being let go by the Lions and whether or not you thought the Patriots might have any interest in having him beef up the secondary.
Well, we haven't really heard anything amongst ourselves here, scuttlebutt-wise, about Brian Kelly, but at this point in the year, you know, it's sort of desperation time. If, like we kind of talked about yesterday with Bruschi, if they feel like they can't wait for him to recover and they think they need somebody, I think they have to look at every option possible, and that guy might be one of them. You always have to wonder, though, why a winless team let a guy go, how much value he has. But,
right.
You know, at this point...
Hey, the Bengals let Delta O'Neal go, so...
Well, yeah, that's true. And again, that was a situation where they needed a player immediately, and he was a guy with some experience and some talent, so it worked out. Brian Kelly might be one of those guys, depending on what they feel their need is and how desperate they feel it is. But it's a good point you bring up.
Anybody have any comments on Will Height's play after last week that you heard?
From some fans, actually, our mailbag, we've gotten a couple of letters from people saying, you know, that they thought he looked good and were impressed by him. I got to say, he's one of the rookies I'm kind of pleasantly surprised by, because actually, you know, when we our post draft issue of PFW, we always interview the coaches of the guys who we drafted, just to sort of get a more of a personal feel for who the player is.
Right.
And I had done Will Hite's draft profile along with Gerard Mayo's, and his coaches at Auburn. In fact, Will Muschamp, who's the Texas defensive coordinator, I believe, was his position coach there for a while.
Right.
And what they were saying about him was that he was, they expected him to make this team as a sort of a slot corner, you know, nickel or dime package guy, and not really an outside guy, because he would, they just felt his skills were better suited for that, for that area of the field. And he did make the team that way, and that's where he saw action a lot in the beginning of the season, was in the slot and in nickel and dime packages. But so I was kind of surprised when I saw him out there on the edge against Seattle, you know, because I hadn't really expected that from him all year. But he has actually shown a lot of progress since training camp. He really has come into his own, and he's a lot more confident a player than I think he was when he was first drafted, because, you know, you're a fourth-round pick. You're certainly not a guarantee to make a team, and had to prove himself on a team that, you know, at a position, too, where there were, numbers-wise, there were a lot of guys and there was a lot of talent on this team. He ended up making it, and he's worked his way up. And, you know, he's a player with a big upside, and he's starting to show that now. So, yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised by Will Hite's play.
You know, along those same lines, I think we've seen as the burden has really been placed more so this season on a guy like Brandon Merriweather, he's begun to rise to the occasion. And I'm wondering if you get the impression, maybe, and if others have also gotten the impression, that maybe this is the year where the light went bing on above Brandon's head and said, this is how you have to do it to be successful in the NFL.
I think he's another one too, who is starting to show some confidence. And I think that has a lot to do with the playing time he's getting.
Yeah.
You know, last year he was sort of that nickel slot kind of corner slash safety. He didn't really have a definite position that he was playing. It was sort of like, hey, you can play here or there, depends where we need you. This year it's more, you know, especially with the loss of Harrison earlier in the year, it's his role is more defined. He knows what he's doing every game, and I think that helps with his development, because he knows he's focusing on one aspect of his game, and he can devote more of his attention to that. And with, and you know, and he's getting the reps every game. He's starting every game, and he's you know, he's growing into the role. And as I say that, John, the first bus just pulled up, so I'm going to have to say a quick goodbye and see what I can get from you, but I will I'll try to call back as soon as I have anything for you.
All right, go get your job done. Fred says keep blogging.
Okay.
All right, way to go.
All right, John, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Eric. Eric Scalavino reporting from San Jose, California, where the Patriots are headquartered, and the Patriots are working out this week in anticipation and in preparation of their game with Oakland on Sunday. And as you heard, the first bus is pulling up before the guys get out, and their media availability is a little different out there. They actually talk to the media before practice. Normally it comes after practice when they're here at home, but it's going to be before practice, so they've got to talk to them now, then they'll go out to the field, and then once Eric is able to disseminate everything or anything that he's able to learn from today, he'll report back to us here in the program. So there's the very latest from San Jose, California. And if you missed anything and you're just wondering, or maybe you've been away all week, you've been too busy at work, you haven't had a chance to log on or tune in, if you go to Patriots.com and click on latest news, Eric has just check out underneath the Wednesday notes talking about the Patriots mourning the death of Matt Cassel's father, and Eric will bring you up to date on everything that he's covered over the last 24 to 36 hours out in California. And then he will check in a little bit later on in the program today, a little bit later on in this show, probably during the second hour, with any late news in terms of the preparations and who might be available. You know, it is interesting to note that not only Will Fort, but Ty Warren returned to practice yesterday. So those are two huge steps in the right direction. I think we saw last week, to me, the defensive MVP for this team, for all the good and all of the accolades that we have heaped upon Gerard Mayo, and deservedly so,
He's had a remarkable year. He certainly deserves, Rookie of the Year consideration, Defensive Rookie of the Year, consideration as well. But to me, for my money, the true MVP of this team, the guy that keeps it all together, is Vince Wilfork. The Patriots are so much better run defense with him stuffing the run and him two-gapping up there and allowing guys like Mayo to make their fair share of tackles. You know, having Wilfork and a healthy Warren in that front along with Richard Seymour is absolutely necessary for the Patriots in this final three-game stretch if they are going to win out and have a chance to get into the playoffs. It's necessary. They have to have it. Now, they might be able to get away this week if one of those guys return. Let's say Wilfork's back and Warren was a late scratch, which, frankly, before the injury report came out yesterday, the participation report, rather, not really an injury report anymore, and before it came out yesterday, I was thinking, well, if they could get Wilfork back, nobody really knew what Warren's status was going to be. And since he did return to practice on a limited basis yesterday, you have to think that at least there's now, you know, a 50-50 chance, if not better than that, because he was 50-50 last week before the Seattle game and didn't suit up. So there's a chance he could get back out there. And if he does, and that will only help this team, especially now with Teddy Bruschi, a missing cog in the middle of the linebacking core, you can certainly expect both Junior Seau and Roosevelt Colvin to get at least 50% of the snaps this week, like they did last week. Amazing. And I think I read on Mike Reese's blog out of the defensive participation report, 57 plays. Both Colvin and Sale were in on 28 or 29, which is right at 50%. You can expect that to happen at the minimum again. And I wouldn't be at all surprised out of 50 to 60 plays if they weren't in for 40 plus, because it's just getting lean out there. So, and perhaps they would be able to stay on the lower end of that if both guys like Wilfork and Warren are able to go. So that's a step in the right direction for the team on defense. On offense, well, as you would suspect and expect at this stage, Kevin O'Connell been getting the reps at practice at first team with the first team line, with the first team receivers, with the first team backs, just in the event that Matt Cassel does not return, and perhaps we'll get an update on that before this program is over with today. Whatever way it goes, a legitimate question, as we asked Eric a short while ago, would be, you know, if Matt misses all the pregame prep and shows up in time for the game, does he still get the start? I don't know how you feel about that. Frankly, if the players all feel it's his team, if Coach Belichick is encouraging him to stay away, you know, to deal with family time, everybody takes their own time, then to me, if he's able to come back and be here, he should play. Considering the year that he's had, he should play. I think that's a no-brainer. Now, I say that with all due respect to Kevin O'Connell. Here could also be, if you look at this thing long-term now, here is a perfect chance for you to figure out if you've got your backup quarterback for next year. Because, again, I think we all realize that Matt Cassel, I'd say it's very strong, he won't be back here next year because he'll most likely find himself a free agent deal somewhere else. And he'll be able to command way more dollars, way much more than he would as a backup for the Patriots. No question. And I know people have talked about the Patriots franchising Cassel, and I'm not sold that that's going to happen. In fact, I believe a couple of weeks ago I even advocated for that. I still think that it might not be a bad idea, especially if you know you've got somebody you can deal with. Because if you got somebody who'd give you a first-round pick for the guy, well, then maybe you think about doing that. Maybe you think about doing that so he's guaranteed the salary as a thank you, as long as the team you're dealing with hasn't said, hey, don't franchise him. But then again, you don't have the rights to trade him if you don't franchise him. So I think it all has to, you know, one hand, you know, washes the other, so to speak. But if you don't have Cassel next year, then this is your chance to see Kevin O'Connell in absolute, you know, game pressure situation. What does he do with the team? We're not talking about, you know, preseason, you know, crud here, because quite frankly, I think we all realize that's what it is during the preseason. It's just not a true testament to their ability. Next year, when we get to next August, we'll probably see Kevin O'Connell more than you care to ever see the guy. You know, first of all, Tom Brady will probably be very measured in his steps coming back. He may not even play during the preseason, although I can't imagine coming back from knee injury, you wouldn't want to at least try to begin to shake off some of the rust. But that's another conversation for another day. Kevin O'Connell will undoubtedly be the man, and he will be the focal point next summer. And maybe you get a sneak peek. Maybe you get an early look. And if you're able to get an early look, I realize that there's a lot of pressure on here. You know, at what cost do you get an early look? But it is an opportunity to see if the guy can do it, and whether or not you might need to go out and find yourself another quarterback in the offseason. So it's an interesting question. It's unfortunate that something like this has to happen because of somebody else's misfortune. No question about it. It's almost kind of like injuries. But at the same time, you have to treat this like an injury situation. You really do. Again, without being unfeeling and unemotional about it, because we all feel for Matt. We said so yesterday. We say again today. Certainly, I think many of us, our thoughts and prayers have been with him and his family during a very tough time, especially those of us who have lost parents, and I am one of those, and in the not-too-far-away future, or not-too-far-away past, that it happened. So, at the same time, you have to treat something like this like an injury, and that you pretty much have to expect that he's not going to be there, because you really don't have any other way to plan for it. Because if you don't plan for his non-return, then if you're caught short by his not returning, then it's your own fault. You have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And that, I think, is what the Patriots are doing. So my guess is, at least internally, and again, this is just an educated guess, at least what I think, but it's my own opinion, that the Patriots are preparing for Kevin O'Connell to start this football game on Sunday. Doesn't mean he will. Maybe they'll get some indication here shortly that Matt's said, I've got to get things in order, but I'll be back for the game on Sunday so I can return for the funeral on Monday. That's a possible. It's a possible. And if so, it wouldn't at all surprise me to see the Patriots go ahead and give him the nod, even in spite of the fact that maybe, just maybe, they're thinking about trying to give Kevin O'Connell the edge there. All right, Eric is checking back in from San Jose. Have you been able to find anything out yet, Eric?
A little bit, John, and pretty good news, actually. The buses pulled up, the players got off, went into their locker room, and Matt Cassel was among them.
Wow.
So he is back with the team. He looked like he just came out again, and he was in his workout sweats. So we'll have to see whether or not he practices. We won't know that for at least another hour or so. But the news is that he is back. We're told that he probably will not be made available to talk this week, for obvious reasons and for understandable reasons.
Understandable,
but,
yeah.
I think that's an important development for the team, and we'll just have to see how much action he actually gets between now and Sunday. But it's certainly a better indication of his status for the game than we had yesterday. So.
Absolutely. All right, that's great stuff, Eric. Hey, breaking news. That's good.
That's good.
Well, I'm glad that he's back for his own sake, because this probably gives him a chance to, concentrate on things other than family matters, which, those of us who have lost loved ones in the past, sometimes you need that, number one. Number two, this probably assuages some of the Patriots' fears that, Matt didn't spend any time preparing for this, so how can we put him out there? This pretty much takes care of that question.
Right. I want to also apologize, John, for the noise level. Spartan Stadium here at San Jose State is undergoing a facelift, and there's construction equipment all over the place. You probably hear the racket of this large machinery that's pulling up alongside us here, but it's sort of a work zone for them and for us this week. So sorry if every once in a while there's some din in the background, but it's unavoidable.
You can hear it a little bit, but frankly, it's not any worse than when the din was going on around us here at Gillette, pal.
Well, that's true. And there's been a lot of that, so we're kind of used to it. But yeah, so that's the big news right here for the time being. In a few more minutes, the rest of the players will be made available. So again, if I have anything more, I'll call you back.
Great. That sounds like a plan. Eric, thanks for checking in.
No problem, John.
You're right. All right. Eric Scalavino, again, reporting live from San Jose State in the Patriots camp. And, again, the news is that Matt Cassel is with the team today. He got off of the first bus that had pulled into San Jose State just a short while ago. And, again, while he is not being made available to speak to and understandable where that's concerned, he is with the team. So you can certainly assume that he is at least attempting to get back into the groove a bit before Sunday's game with Oakland. So when we do get further information, we'll be sure to pass it on to you right here inside the playbook. Let's take a timeout. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. So how do you feel about that little bit of breaking news here on the program? It's obviously a good sign, I think, for the Patriots, number one. Number two, on Thursdays, you know, we're looking for some predictions. And quite frankly, it's been real weak the last few weeks. Nobody seems to care anymore. What happened to everybody giving their thoughts on the game?
Let's go, let's go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's go, let's go. You know, I mean, I realize that, you know, we're all living in a perfect world here, and everybody thinks the Patriots are going to win every week, but clearly that has not been the case. They're 8-5. Here's what I want you to do today. What I'd like for you to do is score with Matt Cassel, score without Matt Cassel. Can you do that? Will the score change? Will it differ whether it's Matt Cassel at quarterback or Kevin O'Connell if he should have to play? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the phone number. We will hear from Eric a little bit later on in the program as he checks in from San Jose. And in about 15 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN right here inside the playbook.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
The New England Revolution have the perfect shopping plan to avoid crowded malls and long lines during this hectic holiday season.
Oh, what a save, Reese, again!
This year, get everyone on your list the Revolution Holiday Pack. With the Revolution Holiday Pack, you'll skip the lines and they'll get tickets to four soccer matches of their choice. And they'll get to pick their seats before tickets go on sale to the general public. Plus, they'll receive a limited edition, full-color 2009 Revolution wall calendar featuring their favorite players. We know managing the holiday budget is more important than ever, and that's why the Revolution Holiday Packs start at just $76. We even offer flexible payment plans. You can pay $25 now and the rest in 09. Get your holiday shopping done quickly and easy by ordering the New England Revolution Holiday Pack. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to RevolutionSoccer.net and give the gift of Revolution Soccer. Pride.
Knockdown, it's loose.
Passion.
And it's in.
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriots fans, this holiday season, there's more reasons than ever to head to the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Not only will you save big, but you could win incredible prizes just for shopping. Enter the Ultimate Holiday Contest, and you might win a VIP game day experience, a tour of the hall at Patriot Place presented by Raytheon, given by a Patriots Hall of Famer, dinner with the head coach, and much more. Plus, get a free Patriots gift with any $50, $100, or $200 purchase at the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Can't make it to the stadium? Log on to PatriotsProShop.com and take advantage of the $5 flat rate for shipping on every order, regardless of size or destination. The Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open year-round, Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. Stop in or log on now and enter the ultimate holiday contest at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room. In-store promotions not valid on game day. See site for details.
Rolling along in the playbook for a Thursday here on Patriots.com radio, web radio at Patriots.com. Again, Matt Cassel is back with the team today. Just rolled into San Jose State a short while ago. We'll get further word on how much, if any, at all, he practices with the team today, but that's good news for the Patriots. Good news for Matt that he's able to at least put some of his problems behind him, at least for a short while. Good news for the teammates, good news all the way around, and we'll keep you posted here inside the playbook as the situation progresses and see if we get any further updates on what his status for Sunday may be. Frankly, it's always a good thing. It's never a bad thing. It's always a good thing when you look at it from, an us point of view rather than a them point of view, because if you keep the opposition a little bit off balance on this by, you know, not really, you know, playing your trump card here, then they have to prepare for a couple of different eventualities. Now, if I'm the Oakland Raiders and I'm 3-10 going in, I'm probably not too worried either way. Yes, you want to win the game, but you want to maximize your opportunity if you're 3-10. At least the coaches, I'm sure, feel like that. I don't know about those players because, you know, Adam Schefter, who's been on this program before from NFL Network, he was on local radio here this morning, and he believes strongly that the Raiders gave up, that a lot of players gave up, and those were his exact words, gave up last week in their 34-7 loss to San Diego. That's pretty strong because, you know, I tend to think that a lot of these players, I mean, this is their job, this is their livelihood, and I don't think anybody really takes it haphazardly when you know that, you're basically one play away from your career being over almost every time the ball is snapped. But that there was a lot of, funny business going on in the locker room after the game, and it pissed off some players. Nnamdi Asamoah, to begin with, and we spoke with the gentleman who is the Mike Wagaman, who's from Silver and Black Illustrated, yesterday here on the program, and he kind of said the same thing. You know, some guys like Asamoah and some others, a few others, really took offense by the lackadaisical attitude in the locker room after you get pounded by 27 points. And because of that, you know, you have to wonder how much the players are going to buy into it. Even if the coaches, you know, put a plan out there to beat these guys based on whether it's Matt Cassel or Kevin O'Connell at quarterback, I mean, how much are they really going to buy into it? It's the NFL, and I really believe it in any given Sunday. I mean, I know that's a well-worn, trite cliche term, but on any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody. And of course, unless, of course, you're the Detroit Lions this year. And that's probably the first time that I think we've ever really seen anything or had anything remotely close to that. I mean, frankly, you know, if the Lions were playing the Raiders right now, you'd have to like the Lions' chances. At least I would. But the Raiders have beaten, you know, a couple of decent teams this year. They have knocked off Denver. They have knocked off the Jets, as we talked about, you know, on yesterday's show. So, you know, it's hard to say that, you know, they won't be competitive, even though, you know, you want to hope that it's not that way, that the Patriots, with minimal effort, you know, and minimal further injury, can get through this, you know, for the last two games of the season. I mean, Oakland got blasted in their first game by Denver. They won at Kansas City. They lost a one-point game at Buffalo. They lost a 10-point game to San Diego, so they were certainly in it, even though they started out the season 1-3. Then they got blown away at New Orleans, so they were 1-4 before they beat the Jets in overtime back on October the 19th. 1-4, that made them 2-4. And you're thinking, well, is there a chance to pull it up here? No, because then they get beat at Baltimore, they get shut out to Atlanta, they lose to Carolina. They, you know, even though after Tom Cable came in, they did win, or they did lose very closely at Miami, only lost by 2 points, as you'll recall. That was a game that Miami kicked a late field goal to win it, 17-15. They did win big at Denver, 31-10, almost inexplicably. And they lost by a touchdown to Kansas City, 20-13, 2 weeks ago. So you take one, two, probably three other losses that could easily have been wins for the Raiders, and all of a sudden, you know, they're, instead of, you know, 3-10, they're 6-7. And while they're probably, you know, eliminated from wild card contention of the AFC at 6-7, you're not feeling so solid about your team's chances this week as compared to where they are right now. Let's face it. You know, at 6-7, they and, you know, that's probably where this team lies in terms of their personnel and their ability. A little bit closer to 500 than 3-10 would certainly indicate. That's, again, my own thought, my own opinion here. They are 10th in the NFL in rushing yardage on offense. So they've had a pretty good rush offense. The Patriots are right above them in 9th. They are dead last in passing offense, so obviously there's just no two ways about that. And that brings their overall average of total offense down to, I think, 29th out of the 32 teams. But rushing the football, if they do, as we were told by Mike Wagaman yesterday, if there's a way that they can put the ball in Darren McFadden's hands more than they've done it in the past, then Oakland is going to be, they're going to be competitive. You know, maybe it's a steady diet of Fargus and McFadden, and they're going to force the Patriots to stop that. Frankly, that may be the only way to go. Defensively, pass defense, it certainly has been at least a solid pass defense for the Raiders. They are 8th in pass defense in the NFL. They've given up under 200 yards per game passing going into last week, 193.9, which had them 8th in the NFL. And that's well above where the Patriots are. The Patriots were 16th in the league in pass defense allowed before last week. So, the Raiders are, you know, again, almost next to last, third to last in rush defense. They're 29th, I think. They give up about 160 yards per game on the ground, which, you know, it's a good thing that I think the Patriots have both Sammy Morris and Lamont Jordan healthy, because to me, if it is going to be a Kevin O'Connell with some time at quarterback, I think you want to take all the pressure off of him that you can, and it certainly stands to reason that you'd bang it between the tackles and run to set up the pass for, you know, a younger quarterback. May not necessarily be the case if Matt Cassel is in there, but, the numbers would certainly seem to indicate that that could be a way to go. They're not a ball control offense, Oakland, when they have it, even though they run the football considerably better than they pass it. They're not necessarily a ball control offense. I think they only have the ball 27.5 minutes a game. So it's a team that has some decent numbers about it, but there are a couple of glaring numbers that are out there. They've only scored 16 offensive touchdowns all year long. You'd have to think that that certainly plays in the Patriots' hands. And, you know, for a Patriots defense that is, you know, literally walking wounded, that ought to be a little bit better. I don't really see a high-scoring game here. I'm not sure the Patriots would even be capable of a high-scoring game where this matchup is concerned. Right now, I'm kind of leaning, I said, you know, I need, you know, two scores. I want you to give me a score with Matt Cassel at quarterback and without him at quarterback on Sunday. And with him at quarterback, I think the Patriots probably win this one somewhere in the vicinity of, I'd say, 27-12. Without Matt Cassel at quarterback, it's probably going to be closer to about 20-14. Or 20-13. That's my thought anyway. So I think it would be a little closer without him. the Patriots might have to go right down, you know, into the fourth quarter, not dissimilar to what happened this last week against Seattle, if Matt Cassel is not in and doesn't get them out to an early lead. I think, you know, if you're able to get, you know, the black hole out of it, you score early here. Because this is certainly one of the visiting venues that a team goes into where the crowd can really play an effect. And if you've been to Oakland and gone through that experience at all, you know what I'm speaking of. That's the one thing Oakland does very well. They get the home crowd behind them as best as they can, even when the team is lousy. If you're able to get up early and force Oakland to come from behind and have to throw the football a little bit more, which is getting out of their comfort zone, whether it's with Jamarcus Russell or with Andrew Walter, then you are doing your job and you're well on your way toward beating them. You know, their wins, two of their three wins this year have come on the road. Their one home win of the season, their only win at home, was the overtime win over the Jets back on October the 19th. That's been it. So they're a beatable team as long as you don't let them stay in the game. That's really what it boils down to. As long as you don't let them stay in the game, it's beatable, it's winnable. I'm not, you know, I realize that I'm preaching to the choir here. That's just the one thing the Patriots have to do. So, you know, here is opportunity, and let's see if the Patriots can get one step closer to trying to perhaps, you know, emerge as the leader in terms of the AFC East playoff picture. You know, as we have talked about this week, if the playoffs were to start this week, the Patriots would be on the outside looking in. The Jets would have the four spot in terms of the division lead because they lead the Patriots by a half game in the division standings. They're 3-1, while the Pats and Dolphins are both 3-2 in the division. The Jets and the Dolphins are both 6-4 in the conference, while the Patriots are only 5-5 in the AFC. So another big reason for the Patriots to win this game, they need conference wins here. They've got to get these last two. They'd be 7-5 in the conference. They'd be 4-2 in the division. And I think the Patriots will need that. You know, they're undefeated, as we know. They've won 13 straight in the regular season against teams from the NFC. But they're still going to need the overall win total over Arizona next week when we get to that one. So that's now you understand a little bit more why the Patriots are behind the eight ball in terms of any kind of a tie with the Jets or the Dolphins. And, of course, the Jets and Dolphins still have to play each other, you know, in these last 3 weeks. So one of those teams is going to fall by the wayside. We'll back it up here today by saying the same thing we did yesterday. You still need either Miami or New York to lose one of their last three. The Jets' remaining opponents, they have Buffalo, of course, this week. They will play at Seattle, and then they will play Miami. Now, the most likely scenario, I mean, obviously playing at Seattle won't be easy because the Patriots proved that, but Seattle is 2-11. You have to wonder if Buffalo will ever be able to pull themselves out of the schneid they've been in. I mean, here's a team that started 5-1, and they're 6-7. They have really collapsed. You know, and even though the players, in reading some reports out of Buffalo this week, have said that they haven't given up on Dick Geron, you have to wonder a little bit how that's going. I don't see the Jets losing. I really don't. I'm not sure I see the Jets losing. And in that instance, that's going to be bad news for the Patriots. So I see the Jets probably winning that game against Miami because it'll be in New York. So you have to hope somewhere there that they're going to lose either the Buffalo game or the at Seattle game. And even though the Jets have stumbled the last 2 weeks and lost two games they probably should have won, I'm not convinced yet that they're going to lose either one of those games. So that may not be a good scenario. You can't really do anything about it right now. You can only worry about yourselves. But that's, again, just my own point of view as I kind of look ahead. Miami's remaining opponents, they have San Francisco this week. Then they play at Kansas City, and then they play at the Jets to wrap it up. Now, it's certainly possible that San Francisco gets a win because San Francisco beat the Jets last week, but the Miami Dolphins get San Francisco at home this week. So they're playing in South Florida. And I think we all know that traditionally West Coast teams that come east, they've struggled. So Miami probably wins that. They probably win at Kansas City. Then they're going to lose to the Jets. Miami would be 10-6. I don't think that's the problem. I think the Jets probably take care of Miami. I think you have to realize the Jets need to lose either Buffalo or at Seattle, one of those two, for the Patriots to ultimately win this division. And that is, of course, if you take care of your own business and win these last three. That has to happen. So it starts this week. So to me, I'm going to be watching just as intently almost as the Patriots game on Sunday. I'm going to be watching Buffalo and the New York Jets. Because I think that may be the best chance for the Jets to lose for the remainder of this season. I don't know how you feel about this playoff picture. If you have some comments, I'd certainly love to hear it. Webradio@patriots.com and include your score predictions, you know, with the Patriots with Castle and without Castle for this Sunday, and let me know how that might differ coming into the game. But, it's possible that that last game, if the Patriots stumble, then that last game against the Jets and Dolphins is going to be for the division title. It may very well be for the division title anyway. The winner in, the loser obviously out, no matter what the Patriots do between now and then. Because if both of those teams win their next two games going into that last one, then that game will be for the division championship. And there's really very little the Patriots can do about it at this stage. That game will be for the division title. The winner will be in. The loser will be tied with the Patriots for second and be on the outside looking in, unless somehow, some way, the Ravens or the Colts collapse between now and then. They would pretty much have to lose two of their last three. The Ravens, I guess, are probably the closer of the two teams between them and the Colts that could do that, because the Ravens' opponents are Pittsburgh, at Dallas, and Jacksonville. You could see them losing Pittsburgh. You could see them losing at Dallas. I think as a Patriots fan, you probably have to hope that happens. You certainly have to hope they lose at least one, but it'll probably take two, because their conference record, Baltimore's conference record, is 7-3. And because it's 7-3, the Patriots can't do any better than 7-5. So that might not get decided until the last week. So I think, you know, if Baltimore loses to Pittsburgh this week, I think you're going to have to root for the Steelers, Patriot fans, which it may pain you, I know. And if they lose to Dallas, then the Patriots would have a chance, even with that Miami New York Jets game, if that is for the division title, the Patriots would have a chance to get in as the wild card with a win over Buffalo. If Baltimore loses to Pittsburgh and to Dallas, that's how that kind of plays out. The Colts' final three games, they play Detroit this week. They're at Jacksonville, and then they end up with Tennessee in the last game. But then again, that game with Tennessee is going to mean very, very little to the Titans. That probably is a scenario where you could see the Titans resting guys. So, honestly, and because the Colts have that game at home with Tennessee, I don't think Indianapolis loses again. You talk about a team on a roll going to the playoffs, the Colts are going to be 12-4. That's nine games in a row that they will have won going into the postseason. So the opportunity is going to come from Baltimore. Or it's going to come from Buffalo beating the Jets this Sunday. So there, I went home and looked at this last night, kids, and tried to study as best as I could. And obviously it's an imperfect science, but based on what I'm reading here and based on what I've looked at and looking at all the schedules, and I'm sure many of you have gone through the scenarios as well, this appears to be the Patriots' best opportunity to get in. You'll have to find a way to root for Buffalo this week against the Jets and root for the Ravens to go down to Pittsburgh and then to go down again at Dallas week after next.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Let's see if we can get this man to concur. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joins us as he does each and every Thursday here inside the playbook. I'm already going through the myriad playoff possibilities, and I know you've got this all settled in your head, right, Russell?
Yeah, right.
But do you,
by the way, I just heard you, and I have to correct you on something.
Okay,
Pittsburgh Pittsburgh is at Baltimore this week.
Oh, it's at Baltimore.
At Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Pittsburgh already beat them on a Monday night.
You're absolutely right.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
so.
you're absolutely right. I see it right here. It's right in front of me. It's right, Baltimore home against Pittsburgh.
Right. There
yes.
You go.
Okay, gotcha. So in that regard, then, I mean, I don't know how much you heard of what I was going over here, but I last night I tried to go through and take the Ravens, I took the Colts, I took the Dolphins, and I took, obviously, the Jets and looked at all the different scenarios. And to me,
I'm not sure that we see the Jets lose again. I think the Jets, because it's a home game, will win against Miami in the finale. I can see where that game will be, could be very well easily for the AFC East title. And in that scenario, the Patriots would only be able to squeeze in as a wild card if Baltimore loses two of their last three.
Well, yeah, it's getting down to tricky time, to say the least, John. And, yeah, I've always felt for the last 6 or 7 weeks that division, the AFC East, was going to come down to the final week.
Yep.
Remember, Buffalo, of course, plays New England as well. So, you know, for the Patriots, they've kind of gotten themselves into this weird little rut all of a sudden. You know, we always talk about them not losing two games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't won two games in a row in a while either.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been alternating wins and losses, I want to say, the last 7 games. I agree with you. I think maybe the Colts, theoretically, they are a game behind the Colts. In essence, they are two behind them because
of the loss.
Mm-hmm. If Pittsburgh happens to fall to a wild card, if they lose to Baltimore and Tennessee and so on, the Patriots are 2 games behind them. In essence, they're 3 games behind them because they lost to them head-to-head and stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios here. I will say this, though. The New York Jets better start playing a little better football.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't count them winning their last 3 games automatically. I mean, it was funny. They beat New England and they beat Tennessee both on the road, and they used the momentum of those games to lose to Denver and to lose to San Francisco.
Yeah, I find that just almost inexplicable, and I know
but it shows you the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
That is the NFL and so on, and every week is a different week. And that's why these teams who get on long winning streaks have to admire them this day and age and stuff. You know, we'll talk about Pittsburgh-Baltimore in a little bit, but you just think of, and I'm not much for looking at schedules throughout the year, but you think of the wear and tear and the rigorous schedule the Pittsburgh Steelers have played for most of the year,
mm-hmm.
and they just keep winning. I mean, they've beaten the Patriots and the Cowboys in back-to-back weeks. Now they play Baltimore and Tennessee. If they wind up even winning 3 or 4 of those games,
that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive. So,
yeah, I totally agree.
I think that honed you in. I think that the fact that you play hard all year and have to play escape type of games all year, I think it just makes you better for the playoffs. I mean, I think we saw it better than any example last year of teams that even when they had things locked up, kind of coasting the final 1 or 2 weeks.
Yep.
It all came back to bite them in the you-know-what. And the Patriots and the Giants played their asses off, pardon my French, in that game, that 38-35 game.
Right.
And, you know, made for a very entertaining Super Bowl. They're both honed to perfection for that game.
What do you think is a believable scenario? What's a believable scenario over these last 3 weeks where the AFC is concerned? Have you given it any thought?
Not too much. I mean, I think, you know, let's put it this way. If Pittsburgh happens to win at Baltimore this week,
mm-hmm.
We're pretty much know who the 1 and the 2 seeds are.
Yeah.
And that'll be Tennessee and Pittsburgh.
Right.
So then it filters out. I mean, the Jets and the Broncos are tied with identical records right now, but the Jets, of course, lost to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
But New England beat Denver. Miami beat Denver. So, you know, that 3 seed is still kind of in flux depending on who wins the division.
Sure it is.
You know, to me, you just got to look for the team that plays the most consistent football. And right now, I think New England and Miami are playing more consistent football than the New York Jets are.
Which is
it's
really,
almost like the Jets peaked a little. You know, John, you remember this as much as I remember. Remember the Cowboys last year after they beat the Packers?
Right.
In that big showdown game?
Right, sure.
They never recovered from it.
That's true.
It's almost funny to say it, but they were never the same team after that. And that's why you never get too high, you never get too low following wins and losses and so on. I mean, everything I'm saying sounds like coach speak. The reason it's coach speak is because it pans out. You know? Who knows that better than the coach of the Patriots?
That is very true. Very true. By the way,
we make fun of him sometimes because of his monotone answers.
Right.
But that's the way you have to be. You almost have to be like a flat line. And then when it's all over, you can either celebrate or whatever.
Yep,
and stuff.
Yep.
But you really have to maintain that focus of one at a time. There's no other way to do it.
Right. By the way, you might want to pass this on to your newsboys, but we just heard here about 30 minutes ago from San Jose that Matt Cassel's back with the team today.
Oh, excellent.
So now we don't know to what extent because practice is going to get started here. In fact, as we speak, it's starting now. We don't know how much he's going to participate, but he was on the bus. He was back with the team, and So, you know, we can only assume that means that at least he's going to be able to keep his mind occupied somewhat.
Right. Well, more right. More important than the football game, which is obviously a huge game for them, is, you know, thoughts and prayers. I don't know Matt at all. I'm sure you do and so on. But anytime you have a loss in the family, it's something that you never know how a person's going to react. We all have to go through it. And we all go through it differently. So.
Yes, we do. That's very true. One of the questions we were kind of talking about, though, is the fact that, you know, it's an interesting scenario here because if he wasn't able to play, this, you know, might actually be a decent opportunity for the Patriots to decide if Kevin O'Connell is their, you know, number two quarterback for the future and get an unusual chance late in the season in a meaningful game for the Patriots anyway to see what he's made of.
Well, that's absolutely true, although being the fact that you're tied in a three-way tie for first place might not be the time that you want to really have someone on the job.
That's very true. That, of course, is that's the other, you know, edge on the double-edged sword here.
But let's go back to when Matt Cassel had to make his debut, his starting debut, and that's week two against the Jets in New York, you know, and the Wolves were out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he came through with flying colors. So, you know, we will see. And it has nothing to do with the opposition. We know the Raiders are having another, I don't know, what's the professional term, putrid year? Having another bad year and stuff, getting ready to make some history maybe in the next couple of weeks if they get to 11 or 12 losses here. But it's not the point. It's still on the road, and, it's, you know, back-to-back games on the West Coast, although, of course, the Patriots stayed out there as well. And emotional game they had last week. New England. A tough game with Seattle, an old friend Deion Branch, who certainly gave them some things to sweat about last
week. Sure did, yeah.
And, you know, so ask the New York Jets what it was like to go to Oakland earlier this year.
We were just saying that's the only win Oakland has at home this year.
Yeah, they're quite a team, aren't they?
It's hard to get a real read on those guys. So let's take a look then at the Sunday schedule, and I'm going to start off with the divisional game, Buffalo at New York, because it means so much to so many people who follow the AFC East, and certainly that includes Patriots fans. And to me, this may be the best. If you just look at the Jets as an 8-5 team, forget for the fact, for just a moment, if you can, that they totally blew it the last 2 weeks, which admittedly they did. But if you look at them just as an 8-5 entity, tied for first place in a three-way tie for first in the league or within the division, this may be the easiest chance for them to lose in their last three if you look at it just on paper.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team who, you know, they were actually contributed to the Bills' swoon. Remember, the Bills at one time were sitting at 5-1.
Yeah.
They're now 6-7. They are 1-6 in their last seven games. I'll give you an interesting stat about that. The one game they won, which was at Kansas City, they scored 54 points.
Ooh.
The six losses, they've combined for 76.
Good grief. That is amazing.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. So wow. A lot to be said for that. And they also, by the way, the Bills have not scored a touchdown the last two games, a pair of field goals, lost to the Niners, and, of course, last week's loss to the Toronto Argonaut Dolphins. you look at the way the Jets have played defense the last 2 weeks. It's funny how a running game can take advantage of that. Now, of course, the Jets have run the ball really well. Thomas Jones having a lights-out year. Might finally get to the Pro Bowl this year.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff. He's also scored a touchdown seven straight games. But defensively, I mean, they really couldn't take advantage of running the ball last week. They were on the field for almost 40 minutes last week against San Francisco. And that's including the fact that San Francisco coughed up the ball a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Jets really played panicky, I thought, last week. And, you know, as you well know around this league, you know, learning how to close things out, the hardest thing in this league to do, besides win games, is beat teams you're supposed to beat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets are, you know, Buffalo looks like they're headed completely in the opposite direction. But I agree with you, these divisional games, you know, Buffalo has beaten them in New York the last 2 years.
Yes, they have.
So let's keep that in mind. You know, everybody was ready to put the Jets in, who gave us a Subway Super Bowl, you know, after they beat Tennessee. And just a hint. The other team in New York isn't exactly
firing on all cylinders
heady,
right now.
Heady ground every, and I know it's just one loss, but we'll talk about that a little later.
Sure, absolutely. The other division game, San Francisco playing at Miami. Can the 49ers, even though this one's on the road, can they do it 2 weeks in a row to a divisional team here?
Sure, and remember, they went into Buffalo a couple weeks ago. I've heard so much about this, teams from the Western time zone coming east.
Yep.
Like it's the first time it happened in civilization.
Yeah.
Okay, it's all new thing this year. stop it. Going on for a long time, kid.
Oh, come on. We have so much fun with that. You know we feel like we're superior in the East.
Yeah,
come on. It's the whole East Coast bias thing.
East Coast bias. Exactly right. By the way, funny little point. You know, the 49ers have never lost in this stadium. They've only played the Dolphins once, but they've won two Super Bowls at Dolphin Stadium.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, beat the Bengals, of course, and beat the Chargers.
So. Son of a gun.
What
How
does
about
that mean
that?
This week? Absolutely nothing.
But it's kind of a neat little factoid, which, of course, you come up with from time to time.
But I will say this. The Niners have won three of their last four games after that dismal start, after being 2-7.
Are they buying into Singletary then?
I think they're playing with a lot more passion if you watch them play. They look like... They're flying around the ball. Now, you don't have to give Patrick Willis an excuse to fly around the ball because this guy looks like he can be in the Pro Bowl for like the next 10 years. The problem with the Niners, though, is they still turn over the ball a lot. They still give up a lot of sacks.
Yeah.
And that's one thing the Miami Dolphins don't do. The Miami Dolphins in 13 games this year have turned over the ball 10 times.
That is
impressive. They are plus 12 in turnover margin this year. They were minus 7 a year ago.
Well, that's certainly a large factor into their turning it around like they have.
And, of course, they've been hot as of late, too. Well, they've won six of their last seven, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a great job shutting down teams, but they also gave up 48 points to the Patriots. So everybody has their burps and so on. Miami, this is a very tricky game, I think, for the Dolphins because even though they've been winning at home, they squeak by the Raiders by two. They squeak by Seattle by two at home. They went to St. Louis and squeak a game out by four. So... the last couple weeks, another team that hasn't been giving up touchdowns. Gave up four field goals to the Rams, a field goal to the Bills. Joey Porter is having a monster year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure the 49ers can block him. So I have to give the edge to Miami. And we got through this without talking about Chad Pennington, who's had a pretty solid year as well. But
I think Chad Pennington, it may be in a different year, but I think he would warrant maybe even some MVP consideration because of what he's meant to Miami.
MVP or another comeback player of the year award.
Sure, why not?
And so on, although my early favorite right now for me is Antonio Bryant down in Dallas, who really made a comeback. I'm sorry, down in Tampa Bay,
Tampa,
former Cowboy,
right.
Who's making a hell of a comeback this year considering he didn't even play in the league last year or so. You know, Miami should get this done, but I'm not going to be surprised if San Francisco scores some points on them. So let's put it this way. The 49ers will keep coming at them. Let's just say that.
Right. Interesting games then. Tonight, actually, the Thursday night game that will be on NFL Network, survival battle perhaps in the NFC, New Orleans playing at Chicago.
Well, it's already 14-10.
So. Before the kickoff.
Yeah, before the kickoff, so I will say that. We shall see. I mean, neither one of these teams plays great defense. The Saints have the edge in offense, and the Bears have a slight edge in defense.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall see. But it should be interesting. Chicago, Kyle Orton should be able to take advantage of the Saints' secondary. There's another. The Saints can't seem to get on a long winning streak, but I thought they're most impressed with the win last week was beating the Falcons in New Orleans. Pierre Thomas. Caught a touchdown pass, ran for a touchdown, also set up the winning touchdown with an 88-yard kickoff return. He was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Also, on Sunday in the NFC South, another potential survival battle. Maybe the winner of this one is in pretty good shape, at least a wild card with Tampa at Atlanta.
Yeah, and, you know, the Tampa Bay defense taught Matt Ryan a little bit of a lesson when they played him early in the year. Of course, it was only the second game of his career, but they did a pretty good number on him. And, you know, he continues to impress. Last week, he had another solid game. You know, he a little sloppy at times last week, but, you know, that was a must game for New Orleans. You know, I get a feeling they're going to wind up with 9 or 10 wins and not make the playoffs, unfortunately.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too. I think that will be unusual in the NFC, but I think there's a very good possibility of that happening. And that takes nothing away from what Atlanta's done this year.
Well, the division is loaded, as you know.
Yeah, it's a good division.
Tampa could wind up with 10 or 11, and, you know, they're no certainty for the playoffs either.
Right.
And so especially if they don't play run defense any better than they did Monday night, where they got absolutely gashed by D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart.
Those were college numbers put up against them.
I think Mike Tirico, my friend, said it on the telecast. He said it was like watching Oklahoma.
Yes!
And it was.
Yes.
I mean, those were like gaping.
Old school Oklahoma when they used to, you know, run for 300 a game. Yeah.
I'm going to botch the number, but I'm going to try it anyway. I think Tampa came into that game having given up 5 or 6 running plays of 20 or more yards all season. They gave up 5 alone in that game.
Wow.
It was something like eight. It was some minuscule number.
They're doing more than
But they gave up five plays of 20 or more yards on the ground in that game.
They're doing more than just soul-searching in that clubhouse this week, aren't they?
That's exactly correct.
Wow. Okay, a couple of others then. Interesting battle of divisional leaders, even though it's intersectional, interconference here. Denver at Carolina. If Denver were to win this game, I would be much more convinced that they are a contender rather than just a simple pretender and a byproduct of a weak division. Would you go along with that?
Yes. You know what's funny is, in a certain way, doesn't Jay Cutler and Eddie Royal remind you of Jake DeLome and Steve Smith a couple years ago?
Yeah, and a little bit.
Right.
Sure, I can see that. Yeah.
And doesn't Carolina right now remind you of the Denver Broncos in past years with the way they're running the football?
Sure.
Yeah, so a little kind of interesting little reverse going on right now. But, you know, D'Angelo Williams having a monster year. Jonathan Stewart was at 699 himself. So, you know, with a big game, they could wind up with a pair of 1,000-yard runners down in Carolina.
Sure they could.
They have done such a good job on their offensive line. You know, everybody talks about Stewart, as I've been blabbering about. But getting Jeff Ota in the first round of that draft was a big pickup for them as well. He solidified the right side. He got Jordan Gross on the left side. Carolina is good again because they are better on the offensive and defensive lines, and that's the key to everything.
Yeah. I would think that they probably win this one. But then again, Denver can show a lot if they can stay close and steal it.
They can surprise you. But if they play defense like they have all year, they're going to probably be in a little bit of trouble here.
Well, I would think so. But I give Denver a fighter's chance here because they've won.
I give Denver more than a fighter's chance. John, only, you know, I remember what they did in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I was about to say, they've won four games away from home this year.
Right.
That's
it's
pretty
not
good.
Like, yeah, listen, it's, you know, Denver, when you play the kind of defense they play, the home and away doesn't even matter to me. You know, listen, Jacksonville's won four games this year. They went into Denver and beat them. They've lost to Miami at home. And they should have lost to San Diego at home. You know, so Denver at home hasn't exactly been, you know, money either. And stuff, but that's because of the way they play defense. And they're going to have to really be tightened up on their run defense. I mean, Carolina is capable, a 10-win team, but you have seen they have laid, when they have lost this year, they've laid some big eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They laid an egg at Atlanta. They laid an egg at Tampa Bay. So when they have lost, they've come up real flat.
Divisional battle here, or a battle between division leaders, Minnesota playing at Arizona. Obviously, I have to look at that one simply because that's next week's opponent in Arizona coming this way, you know, to Foxborough. And I got to admit, at least already on paper, I do not like the matchup of Arizona's big receivers against the Patriots secondary. Not at all.
Yeah, but I also like, you know, you also got to look at the way Arizona plays offense. They don't run the ball at all. They still put Kurt Warner in harm's way. In terms of you know, turnovers and so on. I mean, he's at any one time capable of throwing five touchdown passes and at the same time turning over the ball six times in a game. So, the Cardinals are going to playoffs for the first time since 98. They won their division for the first time in 75, and they're going to host a playoff game for the first time since 1947.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to them. It'll also be interesting to see if Gus Frerotte is around this week because it sounds like it might be Tavares Jackson for the Vikings. The Cardinals' defense played better football last year. They were a lot more opportunistic and a lot more physical. This year they've really had their lapses. It'll be interesting to see how they fare against Adrian Peterson. But I also watch that Vikings secondary. They could get lit up big time this week.
Yeah, I kind of like Arizona at home in this one, just all things being equal, especially if Tavares Jackson's pulling the trigger. And really, you know what, I hate to sound like a downer on the guy, but I'm just not convinced he's an NFL quarterback.
Well, he was benched after two games, I believe,
yep.
And Brad Childress said that Gus Frerotte was his starter for the rest of the year. Not exactly a ringing endorsement.
Nope, it's certainly not. Certainly not. The other one that certainly has some effect on the Patriots would be Pittsburgh playing at Baltimore. You know, honestly, as I've already kind of opined here, I think this is an opportunity for the Ravens. If the Patriots are to try to squeeze in through the wild card spot in the AFC, they need Pittsburgh to win this one on the road at Baltimore. Baltimore would have to lose two of their final three, and it could certainly start here.
Yeah, it could. And Pittsburgh hasn't fared well down there the last couple of years.
They haven't.
That first game this year, it was very much like the Dallas game last week. Baltimore looked like they were in control of the Steelers, and then all of a sudden, Roethlisberger made a play, and the defense made a play. Harrison and Woodley on that Monday night It wound up in overtime, and Pittsburgh won it. Just like the Dallas game last week, looked like Dallas was in control, and then all of a sudden Pittsburgh struck. They got a game-winning interception return for a touchdown. The Steelers are just finding really interesting ways to win, but both these teams really bring their defense. And a lot's been said about Pittsburgh's, but here's a little improvement segment. 4 weeks ago, the Giants had 207 yards rushing and scored 30 points against the Ravens. In the last three games, Baltimore has now given up 205 on the ground total.
Total, wow.
And 20 points.
So what did they do to shore things up?
Well, I think it shows you how good the Giants' offensive line is more than anything else. And Pittsburgh's offensive line isn't even in that class. But Pittsburgh's defense, I give them a slight edge on Baltimore. And slight edge in this matchup because even though they can physically beat up Ben Roethlisberger, and they have done it in the past, I think there's more confusion they can create for Joe Flacco. And, you know, Pittsburgh has really been – their last four games – the Steelers have 13 takeaways, 11 sacks, and they get up 43 points.
Yeah, we saw it firsthand here a few
weeks
ago.
Yeah, you did.
And
you look and think about it. You look at some – Tony Romo had not seen that defense.
No.
Either at Jason Campbell, either at Matt Cassel, either at Flacco the first time.
But still, yeah. But what a major, major brain cramp the Cowboys had last week. Floored by that finish.
No doubt about it. But if you were going back and look at the game, as you know – the Cowboys turned over the ball five times in that game as well.
They had no reason to even be there to begin with.
Right. Absolutely. But I think my point I'm more making is one of these teams is bent more on fury. The other one is built more on confusion because you never know where the Steelers are coming from in terms of their pass rush. Although James Harrison and Lamar Woodley have been magnificent.
Yes,
I think they've combined for 26 and a half sacks, just the two of them.
Yeah.
I'm leaning toward Pittsburgh here. And I say it for this reason. So much was made coming into this season about Pittsburgh's toughest schedule in the league. Well, they have kind of managed to win 10 games playing this playoff-type football for at least 2 months. I mean, you think about their schedule the last 9 or 10 games. They played the Giants, the Redskins, the Colts, the Chargers when they were still in it, the Patriots, the Cowboys. They play Baltimore this week, John. They play at Tennessee next week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is... If you're let's put it this way, if you're looking for the best game every week and just floating around the channels,
chances are Pittsburgh's
in it.
Yeah.
And
not
because necessarily they're the best team in the league, but they're playing one of the best teams in the league. I mean, but I think Pittsburgh gets it wrapped up here. They'll wrap up the AFC North, and to me that sends up a heck of a tilt next week with Pittsburgh at Tennessee.
Tennessee, absolutely. Yeah, I kind of have to go with you on that one as well. Pittsburgh's won five games away from home. I think that they've got at least a little bit of an edge here based on the whole Pittsburgh defense versus Joe Flacco in Baltimore offense. One of my favorite all-time games to watch, in addition to Cowboys-Redskins, is Cowboys-Giants. And that's the Sunday night game on NBC. The Cowboys get it at home. Giants stumbled last week. Cowboys really stumbled. Cowboys need this one in the worst way, or I think the Cowboys won't make the playoffs.
You know, the Dallas did not finish last week, but I'll tell you one thing. They played really good defense last week. You had to be impressed with their physicality last week. I think the Giants are reeling a little, and I'm not going to so much go with the Plexico Burris issue. But, you know, sometimes after you lose a game at home and then have to hit the road, and there's a possibility Brandon Jacobs will not be around for this game this week. Now, Burris is already out. Sometimes confidence wanes a little. And listen, the Giants have handled distractions all that well. I think Dallas needs it more, and I think Dallas gets it Sunday night.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I'm still nervous about it, you know, from a Cowboy point of view, but you're right. If Brandon Jacobs is not there for New York, I think that puts the Cowboys, I think it puts them over the hump. And they may win it anyway, even if he's in there, simply because he would be less than 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Dallas, you brought up a very good point. I had not seen really the kind of physicality that they played with like they did last week against Pittsburgh, which is another reason why I was so shocked that the game just blew up in their face right at the end with the pick six and all. If the Cowboys can get a lead on the Giants and then somehow maintain that lead, no matter how slim it is, I think they hold on. But if the Cowboys are having to come from behind in this one, I think there's doubt in the Dallas heads. And frankly, I'd see the Giants holding on.
Yeah, I could see that. But I think they start fast and finish fast in this game. I really do. because we'll spend all day Monday somewhere going, "What's wrong with the Giants?"
Yeah, well, that'll be all over the New York papers this week.
Of course it will.
If both the Giants and the Jets lose again, oh my goodness, it'll be like Armageddon,
Subway Super Bowl or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can see the New York Post now.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they'll come up with it. Your game, the ESPN Monday Night game, Cleveland at Philadelphia. Are the Eagles still in this, by your estimation?
Yeah,
I mean, you guys are going to bill it as that, I know, but...
No, but I think it depends on what happens within the rest of the division. I mean, if Dallas wins, it doesn't do the Eagles any good. I mean, obviously, but you also got to look around to see what Atlanta does and Tampa goes. Listen, they've dug themselves a hole. There's no question about it. And I don't think they'll have any problem with Cleveland, who hasn't scored a touchdown, by the way, in three games.
Yeah.
6-6-9, it sounds like something from The Omen. And, you know, I think Philly could make a late charge here and so on, but they need an awful lot of help. I mean, I know they've done a good job beating two first-place teams the last 2 weeks, the Cardinals and the Giants, but they need an awful lot of help to get in. I don't know if things are going to happen. They're going to need one of these teams ahead of them to just totally collapse. And I don't know if Dallas is going to totally collapse. I mean, I took more out of the Cowboys losing last week than people thought, instead of just another lousy day by Tony Romo and his company. So.
Mm-hmm. Is Romeo Crennel done? Is it out of fait accompli?
Yeah, I love when you speak French, but I'll say yes.
Yeah, I kind of think
so,
too. Now, here's the interesting thing, because we've heard, you know, obviously different things all week long. Is Marty Schottenheimer really in the mix?
I would have guessed there's some interest there. I think knowing Marty a little bit, and I have not talked to him in over a year. He was here visiting, you know, shortly after the San Diego situation and stuff. Did some shows for us on NFL Live. Again, I haven't spoken to him and so on, but if you know Marty the way some of us know Marty and his passion for the game of football, I think if someone comes a call and he has to listen. So we shall see. Hey, it's been a trend in all these sports. Old coaches, old players, everybody going back to the team they were originally with.
Yeah, pretty weird, huh?
Yeah, it's a really big kind of a deja vu on steroids type of thing.
Does that mean we're going to get Chuck Fairbanks?
Yeah, but only for a little bit.
Yeah, somehow.
Some way. Let's put it this way. He won't be around for the last game of the season.
Well, how about this? How about this? And we'll wrap it up this way. How about a John Madden return to Oakland? Because that might be what it takes to get the Raiders back going again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but one of their players is coming back this week.
Who?
Randy Moss.
Oh, I thought you meant for them.
No. I think, by the way, I got to give Randy credit. Randy, I can't remember why he missed three games in Oakland over the 2 years he was there. But I want to thank him for providing me with a perfect statistical comparison of his days in New England compared to Oakland. And I'll just leave you with this. 2 years in Oakland, 29 games, 102 catches and 11 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
29 games with the Patriots, 159 catches and 31 touchdowns. 29 games.
A little bit of a difference.
Yes, I would say so.
Small difference.
Patriots defense need to be a little tightened up this year. I know they're a little banged up and so on. But they got to get some heat on Jamarcus Russell, put some doubt in his mind. It looks like he's probably going to play.
Yes.
Regardless, I just think the professionalism of New England prevails here.
Yeah, I kind of do too. And again, as we suggested earlier and we reported here about an hour ago, Matt Castle's back with the team today. We don't know to what extent, but him being back with the team would lead us to, at the very least, speculate he's going to try to play on Sunday, which,
right,
you know, hopefully will be good for him and allow him to you know, take care of his own internal problems. So that's
absolutely. Well, Godspeed to him and I hope it to his family. And
yep,
so on.
Yep, no question about it. Russell, great to visit with you as always. Thanks for spending the time with us here.
Absolutely.
And
I'm sure we'll talk next week and we get all that Merry Christmas stuff out.
Very true. And next week, of course, you know, with only 2 weeks left to go in the season, I would assume we'll get at least a bit more clearer picture on what the playoff, you know, opportunities will be.
Yeah, depending on what happens this week, we could have two or three more divisions clinched. And so on. But not the AFC East.
No.
It's going to come down to that last week.
I agree.
And it'll be interesting to see what the league does. You know, the last week of the season with the flex schedule, they only have to give you 6 days' notice. You know, so.
So we could get some games moved around for primetime?
We get some games moved around, and wouldn't it be interesting to see the Jets and the Dolphins in that primetime slot at the end of the year?
Yeah, I guess it's possible.
After having known what New England and Buffalo did early in the day.
That's also true. Well, the best-case scenario would be the Patriots to beat Buffalo, clinch a wild card, and then, depending upon what happens in the other game,
you know, possibly division champ.
Just gravy. There you go.
Yeah, make it gravy.
There you go.
We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay, John.
Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
All right, Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, with us here each and every Thursday inside Patriots Playbook. All right, it is web radio at patriots.com. A couple of things that we've asked today, your thoughts about Castle at least returning to this stage against Oakland as he's back with the team today, and what you think the score in Sunday's game could be with him as the starter or with Kevin O'Connell as the starter. And is there any difference, you know, between the two? So we want to talk about that. Anything else on your mind? Who's your Heisman Trophy pick for this weekend? We won't get a chance to talk again before the Heisman Trophy is settled on Sunday night. I'm sure Strippers has an idea or two. But if you have a prediction for the Heisman Trophy coming up on Saturday night, I'd love to see who you think will win. If you think the Big 12 quarterbacks are all going to, you know, basically, you know, split the vote and give it to somebody else, or you think one of those guys is strong enough to be there. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, inside the playbook.
Like the Patriots? Like winning stuff? Join the BXP program from Verizon. The same company that always delivers the Patriots to you through RazorShop Fios, blazing fast internet, and in-depth mobile content is now delivering you to the Patriots. I'm talking about field passes, stadium tours, luxury boxes. Want to watch a game from the press box? How about the sideline? Don't like the sound of your own voice? Have a Patriots player leave your outgoing voicemail. That's the level of access I'm talking about here, folks, and it's all a part of the program. So how do you become a VXP? It's simple. Just text VXP Play to 51500 or go to v-xp.com for an entry form. For a chance to win, just answer some Pat's trivia. That's it. There's a new prize every day through December 28th. Text VXP Play to 51500 or register at v-xp.com. The VXP program from Verizon. Victory comes to those who play. No purchase necessary. Void in Florida. Promotion ends 12/28/08. Play daily from noon to 8 p.m. Eastern. Must be 18. Official rules at v-xp.com.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
So, Sarah, how's your holiday shopping coming along? I don't know about you, but I haven't even started.
Holiday shopping? I took care of that last week. Went to Patriot Place in Foxborough.
I've heard of Patriot Place. There's a ton of stores, restaurants, a movie theater. But you got all of your shopping done at one place?
Yep. Took care of the kids list at Hollister and Life is Good. Greg's gonna be psyched with the gear I got at Bass Pro, Circuit City, and the Patriots Pro Shop. Bought my mom some really great stuff at Christmas tree shops. And I had to treat myself at Victoria's Secret. Oh, and I stopped in for a facial and a massage at Green Tangerine Salon.
So shopping and relaxing? Now you're talking. It looks like my holiday shopping might just be at Patriot Place.
I told you, the holiday shopping for them and a little something for me.
Visit patriot-place.com for Santa's schedule, holiday hours, events, and more. Parking is free with convenient valet and shuttle service available daily. Donate a new or gently used coat to make a child's holiday warmer at any store. Proceeds benefit Cradles to Crayons. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
John Rook inside Patriots playbook here for a Thursday. Pats and the Oakland Raiders at 4:15 Eastern time on Sunday from Oakland, California and the Coliseum. We will have Eric Scalavino, if you've got anything else to report from practice day here in the next few minutes. If not, just assume that nothing has changed. He's usually pretty good about that. Matt Cassel again back with the team today. Don't know yet to the extent of which he will be practicing, but he is back with the team today, and so that's perhaps a step in the right direction. Let's share some emails with you that we've gotten over the last hour or two. William writes, assuming that Brady is back and McDaniels gets an offer, he can't refuse to go elsewhere. I find it hard to believe that the Patriots would hire an offensive coordinator to install a new offense. Would a possibility be for Brady to either actually or effectively act as his own offensive coordinator? Surely he has the experience to scheme and call his own plays. Perhaps this would be too much of a workload for one person. Had this been tried before in the NFL? Well, that's a great question. Not to my knowledge, although I think it's been long thought that some of the old school quarterbacks, guys like Unitas, Staubach to a certain extent. Let me see. Who else? You know, I mean, there have been quarterback coaches, not so much offensive coordinators, in the last few decades. I don't know that a quarterback has really acted as his own quote-unquote coordinator, because a coordinator's job isn't just to coach the game. His job is to help, you know, basically set a game plan up for the personnel that he has. So, I doubt that that would happen. Now, that being said, if Josh McDaniels got a head coaching job and Brady does come back, which everybody assumes that certainly would happen, my guess is what the Patriots do is they go out and they find an offensive guy whose philosophy is already similar to what the Patriots and Josh McDaniels like to do. I don't think you're going to go get somebody who wants to, you know, play 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you know, Ohio State old school offense. You know, I think you're going to look to find somebody who's going to West Coast dude, who's going to, you know, is very adept at five wide. I mean, the NFL game is pretty much a spread anyway, just like it is in the college game now. There is certainly at times much more of a reliance on the running game, but you'd just go out, you'd find somebody I think that would be in tune already offensively to what the Patriots have done, who might want to bring in, you know, a play or two or an idea or two, maybe even another coach or two, to tweak it a little bit, but the basics would stay the same. Terminology would probably have to be something I would think that if you bring in a new OC, that the terminology would stay close to where it has been. It'd probably be more of the coordinator, whoever is brought in, having to adapt rather than the Patriots adapting to him. Now, that's how I see it. That may or may not happen, but to me at this stage, if something like that did happen, that would be the most likely scenario. Steve from Winchester. I noticed that the Pats opened the Seattle game in the 4-3 defense with Jarvis Green and Vrabel in down positions at end, and they gave up a big opening drive for a touchdown. They've used the 4-3 here and there throughout the season with very consistent results. The middle of the defense has been wide open. Against Seattle, there were long runs up the middle, and the tight end torched them repeatedly. Pats used a 4-3 against Miami in the first game where we were equally ineffective. Now, I'm not sure if it changes the way they defend the middle of the field or if it's a problem with personnel. Jarvis Green has strangely been ineffective this year. Your thoughts? That's a great point, Steve. That's a great, great point. You know, frankly, I've been somewhat of a proponent of them playing more 4-3, but now that you bring this up, I had not yet had a chance to break it down and find out where the gashes up the middle of this defense have come against. And if what you're saying is correct, that most of it has come against the 4-3 as opposed to the 3-4, then I think we'd be hard-pressed to go to more 4-3, wouldn't we? And maybe that's why we see a reluctance to just out and out do that, even though some of the personnel groupings stand to indicate that. That maybe because of some of the injuries, they have more, you know, they have a more favorable lineup in a 4-3 in terms of getting able-bodied players on the field together at the same time. there is no denying that they have been woeful up the middle against the tight end. If I'm a team, that's exactly what I'm doing. John Carlson last week scared the you-know-what out of me. And you know what? To his credit, Eric Scalavino, right here on this program last week, he said the same thing. He said, I have some real doubts about Carlson. I think he's a pretty good tight end. I think he's got an opportunity to do some damage, and he did. And, any team that has a tight end that has, solid hands and a little bit of an ability to run with a football, and get the yards after catch, then I think that's a problem for this Patriots defense. Now, this is where you're finding, this is where Gerard Mayo's inexperience is coming into play, because in a 4-3, he's the one that's basically going to be standing in the middle, especially now that Teddy Bruschi's out of the equation. And, he's great against the run. He certainly has the speed and ability, I think we all realize, to be able to cover a tight end. But this is something where only time in a defense like this is going to enable him to be able to make the right call at the right time. He's also going to need considerable amount of help from his secondary, if not the safety in particular. And I'm just not sold on Brandon Merriweather just yet. I think he hits well. I think he supports the run very well. I don't think Merriweather covers the tight end very well either. If, of course, that is his duty. At least I believe it's his duty based on what I've seen out there, because he's certainly been trailing a lot of those plays. Patriots have all but forgotten about the opposing team's tight end when they're in certain sets. That's a big problem. Jarvis Green being ineffective, well, he was hurt earlier in the year, so, maybe he hasn't been 110% where that's concerned. I would agree he's had less effectiveness this year than he has had in the recent past. But if he's healthy, and Ty Warren, who is back at practice, and Vince Wilfork, who's back at practice, and Richard Seymour, who's already been in practice, if those four guys are healthy, then in whatever rotation they choose to put them, that's only going to help the linebackers. They must get pressure every week, but they're certainly going to have to get pressure on Jamarcus Russell and force him into some ill-timed throws. And, again, if the Patriots can get the jump on the Raiders and get the lead on the Raiders are not coming back here. If the Raiders are able to stay in this game on Sunday, then the Patriots are going to be in for a fight. Patriots have to put them away when they have an opportunity to put them away. All right, Mitch says, wondering what the Patriots' defense will look like next year. Like, who will be back, Teddy? Love the guy, but it's time, isn't it? Taking into consideration who are the rookies that look promising to you and the vets, do you think they will trade, pick? I'm curious. They really stink at corner. What's the picture? And this is from Mitch in Florida. Well, it's still a little early to say in terms of, guys who could be considered. I personally believe, Mitch, that Teddy will be back next year. I do believe he will be. I don't think he wants to leave on an injury. Just like part of the reason why I believe that Junior Seau is back this year, he wants to go out, as best as he possibly can. Obviously, he didn't go out on an injury last year, but he went out on a downer in the Super Bowl. And I think he'd just like to leave, if, of course, he leaves, I think he'd like to leave with a good taste in his mouth. And I think that's what he feels like he's got an opportunity to do here, otherwise he wouldn't have come back. Teddy, I think, whatever his knee problem would be, I think he'll rehab, and I think he'll come back for another shot. I do. I believe it strongly. We could be wrong. He might decide to say, I've had a good run. Might be it. You just don't know what guys think after they've had, 3 or 4 weeks to rest after the season is concluded. You just don't know. But my gut says that Teddy comes back another one. I don't think Rodney Harrison will come back. I think he'll hang it up. He's had so many devastating injuries over the last 5 or 6 years. I just think Rodney Harrison's done, and I think we'll all pat him on the back and say job well done, and thank you for everything you gave to this team and to this organization. And it's time now to take some of the health that you have left and ride off into the sunset. Rookies that look promising. Well, I'd love for them to get Brian Arakpo, who won the Nagurski Trophy this last week for outstanding defender, but I don't think he'll be around. I think he'll be long gone unless the Patriots can trade up. Boy, you talk about a rush end or an unbelievable prototype, big outside linebacker. Could you imagine a guy like Arakpo along with Adalis Thomas at bookends at linebacker? Now, there's your replacement for a guy like Vrabel, if, of course, he decides to retire. Vrabel is another one of those that could retire. He almost did this last year. And in fact, if you really had to hold my foot to the fire on this one, I'd say Vrabel goes before Brewski does. That's just, again, pure conjecture. Who knows? I'm speculating wildly here. But at least that's my thought. As far as the corner, well, they're definitely going to attack that. I don't know if they deem that there is a first-round selection at corner. Usually that is not the case for anybody, unless, of course, you've got one of the top six or seven or at least 10 picks in the draft. But my guess is, yes, like last year when they picked up Will Height and Wheatley, my guess is that they will look for a cornerback again in the draft in an effort to, you know, shore up that position. I know the Patriots would love to have Nnamdi Asamoah of Oakland. But as Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated told us here on the program yesterday, my guess is they don't even get a chance to touch the guy, even though he's a free agent this year, because Oakland will probably franchise him again this year. You're allowed to do it twice. They'll probably do it for a second year, and he won't have a chance to come out as a free agent until the following year. But then again, the following year, I'd be stunned if the Patriots weren't in the running, because I still think we'll still be in a little bit of flux, you know, where the defensive backfield is concerned. He's 6'2" and 210 pounds. That's a corner with size, man. He's played safety. He could go both ways. He's a perfect hybrid in that regard for this Patriots defense. Strippers says, your pick for the Heisman. Well, Strippers, I'd like to know yours. I mean, in all honesty, I'm assuming you're saying, you know, Sam Bradford from Oklahoma, because you're, you know, such a, you know, a Sooner wonk. But here's what I think will happen. With the three finalists between Bradford and Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow, I believe, in my own opinion, and I used to have a Heisman vote a few years ago until I got out of the daily talk show business. I had a Heisman vote, and I realized fans can still vote, but I actually was on the voting committee. As part of the sports writers that were and sports broadcasters that were selected to be a voter on the panel. I think that Tim Tebow is going to win. Obviously, I'm going to support Colt McCoy because I think he's had the better season overall of the three. When you add into his ground game, you know, he leads the team in rushing. The fact that, you know, they had every bit as good a record as either one of the other two teams. And, yes, he beat Oklahoma. So, in that regard, yeah, I personally believe if he wins it, he deserves it. It's not like he doesn't deserve it if he wins it. But I don't think he will. I think it's going to go to Tebow because I think the votes for Bradford and McCoy, especially in that part of the country, will end up canceling each other out. And I think even though Tim Tebow has not statistically had the season that he had last year when he won it, the fact that he has had a solid year at the very least, and the fact that his team is in the national title game against Oklahoma, and he hasn't really done anything to hurt his chances, even though he hasn't been, you know, highly thought of in repeating, and when you add to the fact that it's so difficult for a guy to repeat, as since, you know, it kind of thing doesn't happen, I think he repeats. And I think he joins Archie Griffin in that category, which will be a rarity. So, again, I hope that McCoy wins. I won't be surprised if Tim Tebow wins. Frankly, I won't be surprised if Sam Bradford wins, because I think the voters may end up siding with Bradford over McCoy simply because Oklahoma is in that championship game. I know that'll make you happy, Strippers. So, if McCoy finished third, it wouldn't stun me. I don't think he deserves to be third. I think he deserves to be first over those other two. But, again, you know, voters are voters. That's why they do it. So, anyway, there are my thoughts on the Heisman, and we'll see what happens on Saturday. McCoy, by the way, is coming back next year. He's already said that. So I think Texas, with him back next year, Texas should be an early favorite in the clubhouse for the national championship in 2009. Should be. They've got a lot coming back. They lose a couple of tackles defensively. They lose one defensive back. They lose lose a couple of receivers, but they've got a lot of depth, young, good, solid talent in receiving, and they lose one guy off the offensive line. I think it's Cedric Dockery. And that's it. They've got everybody. I mean, so they're going to return 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think they're going to return 16 or 17 starters next year. That's extraordinary for a team that was 11-1 and should have been in the Big 12 and or national championship games. Come on. You know that, Strippers. You know it. It's the system. I understand. Ike from Utah says, I'm a huge Patriots fan and grew up in New England. I think the Patriots win with Castle by 7, and without Castle, they win by 3. That's what I had asked earlier. I think Baltimore loses to Pittsburgh, which creates the Dallas versus Baltimore game huge. And he says, go Dallas. I also think that Indianapolis might lose to Jacksonville and then to Tennessee. And the Pats get the wild card that way. Come playoffs, anything can happen to the Pats' chances for the Super Bowl better than people realize. Well, time is only going to tell. I'm assuming from the email address you're a student at BYU, Ike. So I think that's fantastic. A huge Patriots fan growing up in New England, that's great. Thanks for listening to the show, and thanks for sending in your email. You know, I'm not sold that the Colts, because they're on such a great run right now, I'm not sold they're going to lose to Jacksonville. I'm not sold they're going to lose to Tennessee, because Tennessee will have absolutely nothing to play for that last week. In fact, you certainly could see them and probably wouldn't blame them if they rested guys, because they've already clinched everything they can clinch, which also includes, you know, home field advantage and the number one seed and everything else to the playoffs. They deserve it. They would deserve it. They played better in the regular season. But that is one of the ways the Patriots could get in. I think the real believable, plausible scenario, as I mentioned earlier in the program today, has to do with Baltimore losing 2 of their last 3 games and the Patriots winning still all 3 of their last games. And if that happens, then the Patriots at worst sneak in as the wild card. I think that's more plausible than, even though the Jets stumbled in the last couple of weeks, than the Jets losing 1 of their last 3. I think the Jets will win all of their last 3. And again, just a feeling. You know, I think the Jets will somehow turn it around in time. Could be wrong. We're going to find out this Sunday, and nothing would make me happier than to see them lose to Buffalo, quite frankly. I think most Patriots fans probably feel like that. And if they do, then we can all next week about the Jets and the Bills. And certainly then the division title would be well in play, with 2 weeks to go. And I think we all realize that would also be the way to go, because, hey, if you win the division title, then you get a game at home. You're guaranteed a home game, which would truly be, right now, that would still be an upset. Doesn't look like the Patriots will get there. But I think it's possible. Anyway, thanks, Ike, for the email. Lou in Harrisburg says, the Baltimore situation, I think, is better for us to get some help. And I agree. But I'm not convinced that Pittsburgh will beat Baltimore at home. The Ravens always are up for them at home. Yes, that's true. And as Russell pointed out earlier, Lou, Pittsburgh's lost, I think, the last couple of times that they've been to Baltimore. So it isn't going to be easy, no doubt about it. Please don't rule out Seattle against the Jets. As we have seen, Seattle played us tough. And this will be Mike Holmgren's last game as well at home. And I think Seattle will pull an upset. They will win one for their Gipper. And I think Mike Holmgren will outcoach Mr. Mangini. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Mike Holmgren's last game at home is against the Jets. That could be interesting. I agree. Deion Branch will have a field day, and I think that at home Seattle has a strong chance they truly will play for pride. Therefore, I think the Jets and Miami will lose 1 out of their 3, thus giving us a division championship. All we need to do is go out and win out, and I think, again, that Seattle at home will play the Jets tough. Says, great show. I've written that in the past. I do think San Francisco can beat Miami in Miami's house. Remember, they beat Buffalo in Buffalo's house, and the weather was not too pleasant. All right, good email, Lou. Thank you for the thoughts here. Rich from Howell, New Jersey, says, it's really a shame that they play overtime to resolve ties and that the coin toss is so important. If the Pats-Jets game ended after regulation, how much better off would the Patriots be? They would be on top. Well, that's true. I guess that's true. In a game where the offenses rule, like the Jets game, the coin toss is way too important. Anyway, I got to go find my crying towel. Yeah, I understand. Good point, Rich. That is true, and I really hadn't given that much thought. But if that game had ended in a, 31-31 tie, and the Patriots right now would be 8-4-1, and the Jets would be 8-4-1, and the Patriots would have a 1-0-1 advantage over the Jets in the tiebreaker head-to-head, and yes, they would have an advantage right now. Strange how that works out, but that's how it works out. And yet they play overtime to get a winner, and it just didn't benefit the team because they couldn't stop the Jets. I mean, I understand how you feel. The coin toss is overly important. And we've talked about this on this program this year. I am a proponent for changing the NFL overtime scenario and how they handle it. I think each team should get the ball once. I don't think you should actually, what I really think, the easiest way to do it, just let them play the full 15 minutes. Overtime is overtime. It doesn't have to be sudden death where the first team to score wins and it's over. Let them play the full 15 minutes. I think you'll realize that many of these games, many of the overtime games that are played now in the NFL, the overtime will go a good solid 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes anyway, which is half of the quarter. That's half of the period. So if you're going to play one half of it, play the other half. If you're good enough to win and good enough to have a lead, you're good enough to hold on to the lead. If you don't hold on to the lead, you're not good enough to. Play the quarter. I think that would be the easiest way to do it. Play the extra 15 minutes. And then if the game is still tied, the game is a tie. You don't have to risk any more playing time. You don't have to risk any more injuries or anything else. Play the full 15-minute overtime period and then be done with it. And if the score is still tied after five quarters, then it goes down as a mark. It goes down as a tie, period. Now, of course, in the playoffs, it's different. You'd play the full 15 minutes, but if it's tied after the overtime quarter, then you go into sudden death. I would agree with that because nobody wants to play forever. But at the very least, in the playoffs, you could certainly say without question that each team would have had a fair and equitable opportunity to win the game by playing a full extra quarter. And if it's still tied, then overtime, I think probably you're well served going to sudden death in that instance. And in that instance alone. So if you have to find a way to break a tie, then just break the stinking tie by playing an extra quarter, period. I don't think you have to go to the college idea. I don't think you have to, you don't have to do any of that stuff. Just play the extra quarter and move on. I hope that that happens. I hope the competition committee takes a look at that. I would certainly be a proponent of that. And I guess time will tell. But you're right, yeah, the Patriots would actually have the advantage over the Jets if that game had ended at 31-31. So, but again, you know, you play under the rules that you have, and the Patriots did not do the job defensively that day, and the Jets deserved to win it because they had the ball. But, yeah, it was a little bit of luck, sure. You have to feel like if the Patriots had won the coin toss that, yeah, they probably would have marched down the end of the field as well because Matt Cassel has probably never been better in his football career as the way he was in that drive. He threw that unbelievable dart to Moss, you know, for the touchdown that tied it at the end of regulation. So you have to like the Patriots' chances in that end as well. But then the Jets fans on the other end would be saying the same thing. Hey, it's up to us to stop them. If we can't stop them, you probably don't deserve to win the game. But you're still having a part of the outcome decided on chance, on a coin flip. And playing the full quarter, you're going to get a chance to have the football at some point in time. And it's the only way that you can play an extra period where you really have full football rules and regulations and strategies still come into play. Because now, you know, in the current scenario, you don't have that. You have to game plan differently. Hey, if we win the toss, well, we got to get the ball because we might not get it again. Maybe, you know, you probably do the same thing. Probably do the same thing if you play the full quarter, but I could see a scenario where you might not take the ball, especially if weather conditions are foul. You might try to pin somebody deep. Who knows? Especially if you've got, you know, a defense that can do that. Interesting stuff, but that's just the way, you know, obviously that it goes here. We'll follow that story as it continues to move along. All right, so as we begin to wrap up the program for this week, obviously the news of the day is that Matt Cassel is back with the team. No word yet on the extent of how much he has practiced today, but I think you can assume at this stage of the game that as long as he's with the team, he's going to get some reps in practice today, and perhaps that means that he's at least a little closer to playing on Sunday. And we'll find out more, I'm sure, before the end of the day, probably about the time that the pre-participation report is completed today, which usually comes out after the Patriots are through practicing, and they began practice today at 3 o'clock Eastern time, and it's now almost 4 Eastern. Eastern. So they're only about halfway through their practice out at San Jose State today as we now speak. And so once the practice is over in about another hour or so, my guess would be here on Patriots.com. You'll be able to see the participation report and to the extent maybe that Matt Cassel took part today. So that'll be something to pay attention to over the course of the next couple of hours here. And I'm sure we'll have updates on Patriots.com tomorrow from Eric Scalavino and the Patriots Football Weekly guys as, you know, they will be flying out tomorrow for their full coverage of the Patriots and the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. 4:15 Eastern time kickoff. Pats and the Raiders, and, of course, the Patriots are back home a week from Sunday for their final regular season game at home, and maybe, depending upon what happens, maybe the last regular season game of the year here at Gillette, unless the Patriots can win the division and somehow, you know, sneak out a home playoff game. So something to look forward to. Got to get the win. Got to put one foot in front of the other. Got to start this Sunday. Try not yet too much to worry about the other guys. But if you got to worry about the other guys a little bit, you're rooting against the Jets this weekend, and you're rooting against the Ravens again this weekend. That's what you really need to have happen. You need the Jets to lose. You need the Ravens to lose. And if either one or both of those scenarios happen, coupled with the Patriots win, the Patriots will be sitting in very good shape this time next week when we meet again. Thanks to Dan for everything this week. Thanks to Russell Baxter. Thanks to Eric Scalavino for checking in from San Jose. As the Patriots have stayed out on the week, out on the road a couple of weeks in a row, and everybody will be back in here at Gillette Stadium next week to prepare for Arizona. Also to Mike Wagaman yesterday for his very thorough report on Oakland from Silver and Black Illustrated. So that was also good stuff. Thanks to you for listening, as always. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next Tuesday here, kids, inside the playbook.